They didn't do that then.
I told him, I said, they didn't do that back then. I said, everything, I mean, it was not, they didn't do anything that was on paper.
Oh, golly. No.
I mean, and, you know, it's great that he's being inquisitive, and I'm glad that he's asking you questions, because at least it's showing that he has an interest in this and wants to know.
Right.
But it's just, these questions are like, poof, out from clear out there, and I'm like.
They never did that back then. I mean, signature.
They'd have to sharpen the stone.
Like it's autograph.
About the only thing they did for a signature is they would do what was called the signet ring.
They have a ring and then they do the wax and then put it on there or whatever.
And you could not break that.
Yeah.
If you did, you were dead. Which they did. They put that on Jesus' stone, by the way. The gravestone.
Oh, they did?
Oh, yeah.
Huh.
And Rome was hardcore. You break it, you don't buy it, you buy it. You buy the farm.
And I told him, I said, if I could just get you to sit down and talk to Pastor Mike for about an hour, I said, he'll answer all these questions for you.
Well, the fact of the matter is that you guys can answer the questions.
Not when he blindsides like me like that, and it's like, what?
All you have to say is, okay, that's a good one. I'll get back to you. Let me look it up. Let me find the answer. There's an answer for every one of your questions.
In here.
That's what other brothers and sisters are for. Not just me. I'm not the go-to guy.
Well, I know, but.
But see, I know what you're saying. I can give him answers, but he doesn't know me.
Right. That's true.
Well, you kind of have to put it in, get them to understand. Time perspective.
There's no way on this planet that he'd ever set up a meeting with me. Because he does not know me. Now, every once in a while you'll see somebody that wants to do that, but very rarely.
You can answer him.
And I try. I truly do try. I just don't feel like I'm giving him what he needs. Maybe I am. Maybe I am giving him what he needs.
I'm sure he's going to be able to trust.
But, maybe he can, it just doesn't seem like it's enough.
Write down the question, if he sees you write down the question, right there is something, she's taking me serious. And say, I will go get the. Let me do what I need to do to get the answer to this question.
Yeah.
And if you say,
then you call him.
Or you have him write down his questions, but then you just take one at a time. You say, I will get the answer, but for me, do you care if I do it one at a time?
Yeah.
So he knows that you're not blowing him off.
Don't let him try to tsunami you. Because they'll do that. They'll jump from topic. Pretty soon you're answering a whole bunch of questions, and then they'll get to the point and say, that still doesn't make sense.
And if he's really serious about inquiring,
I think he is.
Then just say, can we do this? I want to make sure that I'm giving you the right answer, so is it okay with you if we just do one at a time?
Because it seems like every time we're together, and when we were riding in the car the other day, a couple weeks ago, he started asking all these questions. It just seems like every time we're together, he's got questions that he's got wants to know.
Yep.
And he says, Mom, I'm proud of you. I said, why? He says, because you've been through a lot in your life. He says, and you're still going. I said, do you know why? He said, no. I said, because of faith. I said, I have faith in Jesus. I said, that's what keeps me going.
And then he started in with?
Nothing.
Oh.
Amazing enough, nothing.
Yeah, see, so that affected him.
Yeah.
That was.
And then he sat and thought about it for a while, and he just went, but I don't know if I have that faith, I said, well, you can have it.
And it's an ongoing process. That's what they need to know, too. It is an ongoing, you know, it's like we are learning all the time, whether we're learning about God's Word or learning about the world. There's things out there that we are learning all the time. And I think sometimes even, you know, non-Christians and Christians think, you know, Christians know it all.
Yeah, and have it all figured out.
We don't know it all. Nobody can know it all. I mean, we don't know everything about everything.
Who
we have to learn.
You're in a small group right now, right? You're in a small group?
Yeah, Friday night.
Okay.
And I was in BSF, but I can't do that anymore. It's just too much for me with working until 7 o'clock.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. How's the Friday night one going?
We didn't have one last week, or last Friday, and we didn't have one this Friday. So hopefully coming Friday we'll be able to do it.
Friday is a tough day.
Yeah, it is.
Jeff and I were talking about that. That group probably is going to need to pick a different day. Friday night is just too tough. The reason why I asked about the small group is there's a lot of people, you know, with a passage in Hebrews where it says, do not forsake the assembling of yourselves together. That small group is the assembling of yourselves together. This time right now really isn't the assembling of yourselves together. It is. It's part of it. But the one another's, it's really hard to practice the one another's on a Sunday morning. Very difficult.
Yeah, because you don't have that
time. And so Sunday mornings are really for teaching. You get some teaching in, I mean, and you get to see some people, but really the one another's don't really happen unless you're in a small group. Just the way it is.
Well, if we don't continue with the Friday night ones, I might end up going to the Tuesday night one with you guys.
And these are great.
But I don't know, because I don't know what time does that start. See, getting off at 7 o'clock just
makes it very
messes
difficult.
Everything all up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it starts at 6.
Mm-hmm. What time do you start? What time do you go to work in the morning?
10.
Yeah, you almost need.
Hey, that's even better than banker hours.
10 to 7.
Not really, because it messes up my whole
day.
It
squishes right in there.
Yeah, but it just messes up the whole day. Once by the time I get off work at 7:30, you know, and then rush, and do whatever, and then go home. And then in the morning, by the time I get up, take a shower, get cleaned up, and get dressed, it's time to go.
What do your weekends look like?
Saturday and Sunday.
Okay. Wow.
Maybe it's night.
What are the Saturday and Sunday? That's your only days off.
Ever.
Jeff
and I had thought about maybe putting that group on a Sunday night for, you know, something that would be more.
Yeah, and that's fine, because that Saturdays and Sundays I usually don't. I mean, other than football on Sundays, that's pretty much it, you know. Laundry.
If you had that group from 4 to 6, or 4 to 5, or whatever, you know, that way you have enough time before and you have time after. You know. Yeah, I'll keep talking about that. Just keep doing. Jennifer had a good idea. That was a good idea there. Write it down.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, and while he's saying it, you could write it down. And then you go, okay, let's handle this one today. Let's do these two real quick. You know?
But it's just that I don't see him enough.
Right.
You know, because in the morning he sleeps. And then by the time I get off work, he's usually either, I mean, because he's looking for a job, because he quit working at Permar, and he's been, I mean, you know, it's just, we don't have that, and that's why I try to answer it there and then, because I don't know that I'm going to have the time to let him know.
Just leave a sticky note.
There you go.
You know, like,
stick it to his forehead when he
leave
when
a
stuff, don't
sticky
get
note
it.
On the mirror and say, you know, just so you know, I'm still checking on that question. I'm still looking for the answer so I can give it to you. I haven't forgot. And that, you know, and if you don't get it for another couple of days, just say, you know, let me know. Still checking.
You know what got my dad? What got my dad was he came out to visit me and my family out in Washington, him and Mom. And we picked him up at Spokane Airport. So it's an hour and a half drive back to Moses Lake. And we got to talking about government and the world situation, and my whole belief was that God was in control, and his whole belief was is that things just happen. And that little micro argument ended with me saying, well, Dad, this is what will always be. There will always be this divide here. And then I changed it, and I said, that would have been the end of it. I said, Dad, can I ask you a question? Because I wanted to get to the core, stop messing around with all these peripheral issues. See, all these issues that your son has are peripheral. The core is, who is Jesus? Not, does he have a signature? Not, it's, did he rise from the dead? Because if he did rise from the dead, nobody does that. And you better listen to him. That's the whole key.
Well, and I've got that pamphlet that says, did Jesus Christ really rise from the dead?
Yeah.
But I got it at work.
Yeah.
And on idle time, when the phone's not ringing, I sit there and read it. So, and I was going to get that, and I thought, oh, crap, I left it at work. I have to, you know, get it. I'll grab one here.
That's the biggie.
Can I give him that so he can read it?
Yeah, and that's where we went. Is he said, what do I think about Jesus? I think he's good, you know, he's a good teacher, he's good this and that. I go, but what about the resurrection from the dead? Because, you know, if Jesus really did rise from the dead, then that's big stuff. And it probably means you should listen to what he has to say. And Dad said, well, I don't want to tell you what I believe. And I said, well, no, go ahead. I've probably heard it before. He says, well, I don't want to hurt your faith or anything. I'm like, Dad, you're not going to hurt my faith. Just bring it on. So he started talking about this thing where he thinks that what had happened was is that Jesus passed out on the cross, and they thought he was dead. So he's only mostly dead. And they took him down, and he resurrected, which was him getting up, waking up, because it was cold and damp, and it affected him, and so he woke up and then walked out. And I went, ah, the swoon theory. And he goes, the swoon theory? I go, yeah, that's what that is. That's what that's called. And he goes, you can see his look. It's just, I mean, it's pretty much like my lucky one. You know, and so we begin to talk about what it would take for the swoon theory to actually happen.
Considering all that he went through?
As opposed to what really happened. And when we got done, he did his famous, this is Bob's famous thing. He went, that's my dad's famous thing. And I said, well, what's, And he goes, it takes more faith to believe what I believe than what you believe. And I went, yeah, it does. Because it didn't happen. He's like, that was good talk, Mike. No one's ever answered that question before. I'm like, probably because you haven't asked it a lot. It's a very basic false theory. But the whole premise of that whole theory is that Jesus passed down the cross, went to the tomb. So here's what he did. Survives the injuries.
Well, that in and of itself
would have been
special.
Well, and the sword.
No, not really. They do that all every year in the Philippines.
Yeah, but the sword.
Nail somebody to a cross, carry them around on a cross.
Yeah, the sword to the side. And,
right,
and
yeah.
I mean, come on.
They didn't do it like the Romans did it, buddy. Romans were weighed and did it
well,
way
just
different.
The beating. The beating.
Itself, yeah.
The beatings that he got would just have.
Would have just annihilated you.
Well, and the infection that would have set in.
Oh, yeah.
There's just no way you could have.
And the blood loss. I mean,
and even
blood
if he
loss.
Would have fainted with jostling around when they took him down and off and brought him to.
Guys, people
just
don't realize
no
that kind of stuff, man. They don't just gently go up there and kink, kink, kink. They knock you down. You're on the ground. And then they just, that's it. And so they covered him with like 100 pounds of stuff.
Well, plus,
spices,
plus they anointed him, right? They anointed him,
with
and you
spices.
Don't, yeah, you don't think that that would have woke him up at some
that
point?
That would have burned.
That would have suffocated you.
Yeah.
So here's what he does. So here's what he did. He survived all the injuries, got the wrap off somehow, woke up, got the wrap off, moved a 2-ton boulder back uphill
by himself.
By himself.
Both ways.
Both ways. Got past a Roman guard, a Jewish guard, and walked 2 or 3 miles to where his disciples were staying, which he didn't know, and then went, I'm back. You know what they would have done? They would have been like, you're back, but you are really, you're in trouble.
Now, when they looked at him,
that would not have been impressive.
There were no,
right.
The only thing was left was the
fine.
Hole.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, the beating, all of that was gone.
Gone.
Oh, you forgot. Stopped down by the river and cleaned up.
Yes. Yes. And this all happened in the middle of the night.
And he
in the dark.
What did he use? Oh, did he use the rats and then wash them with the stones and
yeah.
dry them and yeah.
put them all back where John could find them.
Neat.
Neatly stacked.
He's a man. Neat.
Come on. So I did all
that.
He fainted. He was a girly man.
I did all this, Therese, and it did. My dad got to the end where he's just like, dang. He goes, Mike, it takes more faith to believe what I believe. In other words, what he was saying to me is saying to me, what I believe is screwy. There ain't no way on this planet that could have happened. You know, so it's just conversations like that, Therese. Not, I mean, and this is over periods of years.
Yeah.
You know, answering his question one at a time, let him think about it. You know, I can remember 3 years, let's see how many years that had been, 4 or 5 years before that? 5 years. One night, I came downstairs, I was staying at his house because I was at Moody. And so, during the breaks, I would stay at their house. And he goes, what about the person that's never heard? What happens to them? And I said, you know what, Dad?
The person that's never heard. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
The aborigine out in the middle of the Australian desert. What do you do with somebody like that? I mean, that's not fair. They've never heard about Jesus, and they die. Would they go to hell? What's up? And I said, you know what, Dad? The Bible says in Romans 1:29 that there is no one without excuse. But that's really not the issue here. The issue is that you've heard. Now what are you going to do with it? And he goes, he did one of his, And that was the end of the conversation. It was over. You know, it doesn't matter what happens out here. What matters is I've heard. So what's my excuse? You know. I mean,
well,
and I
told him, I said, you know, there's no guarantee that you guys are both going to go to heaven.
Right.
I said, at this point, if she believes in Jesus and is saved, she will go to heaven and you won't. So it's a moot point, you know, because he was asking about the people that you're married to and that you love, is it going to be the same up in heaven?
That sometimes brings people to Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Because a spouse gets saved and then all of a sudden, I mean, they're in love with this person and they're going, there is a big chance that I won't see them again. And so that doesn't save them, but that makes them start to go.
That makes them individual.
Yeah, they start to inquire. You know, that was my dad's big fear. You know, getting back to everything. He said, everybody, he goes, I knew you guys were right. I just couldn't get the part that Jesus is God. And he said, I felt left out. I felt like the only guy. I felt like the only one that believes like I did.
I think that's what's hard. People, when they can't believe that Jesus. Three. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really quite simple, actually.
Grasping the Trinity, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because it's
like the fellow. It's like the fellow I work with. You know, he considers the Trinity.
Cold.
The Trinity to be false gods.
Yeah.
That God can't be three persons at one time.
Mm-hmm.
He says, no, that's not true. He says, well, I said, there was still God the Father when Jesus walked the earth. And Jesus was God the Son.
Mm-hmm.
Nope, that was God walking on earth with us. I said, then who was holding the universe together? I said, Jesus was fully man here on earth. I said, if he was fully man on earth, became man to experience our experience and to save us, he couldn't have been God at the same time and holding the earth, this universe together.
Well, if you, in that
sense. And I said, then you still had the Spirit going around and going into people, you know, that were believing what Jesus was teaching. So, if there is no Trinity, the universe would fall apart and people wouldn't have been believing Jesus' teachings.
What would he say that?
He says, no, he can only be, I am the Lord thy God and I shall not put false gods before me. I said, the Trinity is not false gods. That is God.
Golly, dude.
I said, let me break it down. This is real simple. You are a son, you are a father, and you are a husband. You're three things at one time. Is that not true? Well, yeah. I said, so why can't God be three things at one time? You're a human. God's less than you? Well, then he goes back to work and he's...
So Korean. That was funny.
Filipino.
Jesus, while he was on earth, literally was fully God and fully man. Okay. But, so the big argument is did he choose to
set aside
some of his attributes during that time?
No.
Well, obviously something happened because he had to.
He drank.
Yeah.
He felt hunger. He felt tired.
Right. And he also said at that point, nobody knows the end except the Father. Hmm. You know, and so.
So he didn't really know.
Well, he's saying.
I think in his human mind, he did not know.
You know what I always said? Here's the question that I got asked. This is the question that I got asked during the ordination. You want to have a fun time answering questions, go to have that happen to you. The guys go this. They say, if Jesus was fully God and fully man, was it possible that Jesus could sin?
No.
And that's what I said. They guess, well, if he can't sin, then how can he be a true...
Like human.
Yeah.
Human.
How can he be somebody who's absolutely...
Wow. He had to be like us.
Yep. And
he was tempted, right? He was tempted.
You know what I did? I went to one of my famous pictures. I go...
Oh, you just went,
Yeah. There was one other time, there was one question they asked me, I go, I'm punting. I said, okay, guys, here's the thing. Jesus was fully God and fully man, but he was unable to sin. He could not sin because of his nature. Remember? He wasn't born of a man. He was born of a woman. And then Arnie Conrad said, so then how was he able to pay for our sins if he cannot be like us? And I said, guys, a giant boulder can sit in the middle of a river and be in the river and still feel the pressure and what it feels like to be moved around by the water but yet not move. And you can see him there, they're looking around going, what is Trinity's stinking? You know, half of them are like, what? I'm like, think about it. Jesus is like the boulder. All right? The human experience is like the river. Just because he can't be moved like the rest of us weeds and go into sin and all this kind of stuff does not mean that he cannot feel the full force of it.
Well, it makes sense.
Yeah.
He is man, but he's not man. But if he doesn't actually feel the sin, how does he know?
But he does.
He does.
He does feel
the sin.
But like a boulder,
he
can't be moved.
He's got to feel like we do.
Yeah.
But he's God, too.
Yeah. He was tempted in every way, yet without sin.
Well, yeah, because the devil was tempting him, and he walked away because he had God in him. Because
he wants to feel like we feel.
Yeah.
Because he wants to know how we feel so he can...
Well, how many times have we been tempted to sin, but we turned and walked away?
Right.
We aren't sinning. We aren't sinning every time sin's knocking at our door.
Right. That's exactly right.
But what I'm saying is, it's true though. He doesn't really know the full feeling of what it's like to sin and have that feeling.
Because you don't have to have that. See, that's a fallen concept. In other words, Adam and Eve, they could feel the full weight of the sin, yet not sin. They could still feel the full temptation. When Jesus got nailed by, I shouldn't say nailed because he wasn't nailed, but when Jesus nailed Satan to the cross, basically, disarmed them, he literally got tempted with the three biggies: the pride of life, the lust of the eyes, and the lust of the flesh. That is Satan's unholy trinity that he throws at us.
What is it again?
The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life.
Okay.
The lust of the lust of the flesh turned these stones into bread. I'm hungry. I need to eat. You know, I'll do anything to get something to eat. The lust of the eyes. All these kingdoms I will give you, and the pride of life. Jump off from that temple, because you can do anything if you're the Son of Man. He hit him with all three of those, man. And Jesus survived all of them. And so we might sit there, Teresa, and say Jesus couldn't be our full representative person because he did not sin, doesn't know what it's like to feel sin. But just because he doesn't know what it's like to sin doesn't mean he still cannot feel the full weight of it and yet be without it.
Right. Well, and I know that. I mean, I realize since he did go through all that pain for us and died on the cross and all the pain that he felt for us.
Right.
I mean, I see that. I mean,
That would be like somebody saying, and I hear this all the time when I taught youth, right? When I did youth all the time, I don't have a very good testimony. Well, what do you mean you don't have a good testimony? Well, I haven't done any drugs. I haven't had sex. I haven't done all this horrible stuff and then get saved, and it's just giant, huge testimony. And I'm like, oh my goodness, you have an awesome testimony. You didn't do any of those things. You're saved from those things. You know, rejoice in that fact. Okay, well, they got hit with all that. They just didn't go into all that. But they would look at it as a detriment. Well, it's kind of the same way with Jesus. Is we could sit there and say, well, you didn't go through the mud like we do, so how can you really feel what we feel? Well, whoa, wait a minute. We go through the mud because we're stupid.
Yeah, that's true.
So to feel the weight of temptation does not necessarily mean that you have to go through the mud in order to feel really what I feel. I hate that. I hate that when people say, when people come up to me and they'll say, you really can't reach these people because, you know, you've never been in jail. You don't know what it's like to be in jail, so you really can't. Well, Paul doesn't say that. He doesn't say, well, only you guys that have been in jail visit the brothers and sisters that are in jail. He says, visit those people that are brothers and sisters in jail. You know, visit the orphans. Do the one, I don't have to, you know, that'd be like me saying the only ministry I can really have is people that are diabetic. Because I can't relate to people that have cancer or people that have whatever. See, just because you're not one of them doesn't mean you don't feel the same weight. And so that was my big example. As I said, Jesus is like this boulder. You know, he's like this boulder in the river. The river's going like this. And he can't be moved, but he can still feel the weight of the water.
All the stuff that goes crashing by us.
Yes. You know, I did a couple of those. When I explained the Trinity, I'm like, you guys never heard these analogies before? Come on! You know, they said, well, explain the Trinity. How would you explain the Trinity? I said, the best example I've ever had of the Trinity in physical form, even though it doesn't do it justice totally, is the sun. We've done this before, haven't we?
Yes, we have.
There's the sun. Earth. Okay? The Father is the actual sun. Then there's the light from the sun. That's Jesus. Then there's the power from the sun. That's the Holy Spirit. Okay. So I had that analogy. Half the guys are like, what? I'm like, come on, guys, work with me.
And they all three have to work together
yes.
to make it work. If you don't have the sun, you don't have the power, and you don't have the light. You can have the sun, and you can have the light, but you can't have the light without the power. And you can have the sun and the power, but you're not going to have the power if you don't have the light.
And when you see the sunlight, what are you seeing? Do you actually see this ball, or do you see sunlight?
You
from
see
this?
The sunlight.
Exactly. But you're actually seeing the what?
Power.
You're seeing the sun.
Oh, the sun. Mm-hmm.
But you see, it gets tricky, because are we seeing the actual, or are we seeing the light that's coming from that?
Jesus.
We're seeing the light, but it's still the sun. See? Unless there's a high overcast.
And then you
can
see the
actual
power. When you're out there, you can just feel that sun beating on you.
The power of the sun makes things grow. What's the Holy Spirit do? Now, what's interesting is you see in Hebrews chapter 1, this very concept. Jesus being the very brightness of his appearance. In other words, Jesus is the very image of separate God. The very brightness of his glory. That's what Jesus was talking about in John chapter 6 and 5, where he said, if you see the Son, you've seen the Father. Honor the Son like you honor the Father. The Jews didn't have a problem with this. They knew they were going to kill him for that. Because you know what that meant? Sunlight, sun, same thing. This guy's making himself equal with God. And that's where the UPCI people can't go. That's why they're a cult. But, anyway.
Yeah, he and his wife used to be Catholic.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they went that direction.
So anyway, there you go. Fun, huh? That's the best example I've ever had. Some people say, C.S. Lewis said it's like an egg. Okay, an egg, you have a yolk, an egg, and a shell. There's three. Actually, guys, it's interesting, but Mike's right. God said in Romans chapter 1, we've already talked about that. It says, let's read it. Let's read it in Romans chapter 1. 21. Wait, back up. 20. Well, let's go to 19. Since what may be known about God is plain to them. He's talking about everybody has enough witness of God. Because God has made it plain to them. Verse 20. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power, and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. In other words, guys, according to this verse, you can see God's divine nature, you can see God's eternal power, and his invisible qualities in what he has already made. So, having said that, nobody is without excuse. So, we should be able to see examples of the Trinity in what has been made. And Mike gave a great example. I mean, think about it for a second. I'll even launch off even more than that. Look at you. You can't live without your spirit. Not talking the Holy Spirit now. Everybody's got a spirit. When you die, that spirit leaves. But that spirit is you, right? Mm-hmm. But your flesh is you too. And your mind is you. Mind, physical, spirit. Wait a minute. Okay, take
and
away
the
mind.
You your mind. You are not you.
Yeah. And, yeah. Oh, yeah. You can just try that one, can't you?
Oh.
Yeah, I've heard. Yeah. My.
Yeah. Truly.
It's true. You are not you.
That was not my mother.
Yeah.
That was her body. That was her flesh.
That was
not her.
And her, and okay, so but she's still got a spirit, but it's interesting, the spirit's locked up inside. But okay. You can't jump out of your body. You can't take, you can't say, okay, I'm so tired of this body, my spirit's going to jump out today. And I'm going to just let it sit, and I'm going to run around spirit man.
I'm a new Okay, what about, like, when you're cremated? When you die and you get cremated. And they say that the dead will rise again.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're cremated, does that mean you're not going to rise?
What did God do when he made Adam?
Made him out of ashes and dust and dirt.
So couldn't he do that again?
Yeah.
The other reason we
before
say
the days of embalming,
yeah,
and stuff like that, I mean, those people are dust now.
Yeah. Everybody's dust.
Well, yeah.
You just
might
have
a little wood added in.
Yeah.
Somebody else and see what they look like.
Mike's right. Think about it. Anybody, I'll tell you what, unless you're well-preserved, I was reading this article there yesterday where they were finding these graves that were 5,000 years old. And,
that's
oh, yeah.
Arid regions.
Arid regions and up in the mountains. Guys, anybody who has died in the Louisiana swamps is way
gone.
Way gone. Bones and all.
Yeah.
How in the world does God reconstitute that?
Well, he can do anything.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
just... That's just the way it is.
Well, that was another one of his questions. I mean, even if you're cut up and thrown away, I mean, you know, cut up and parts were distributed. Distributed.
Joyce,
yeah,
Clint.
Right.
What's that? What? Joyce Clint. Oh. Horrible.
You know.
That was awful. Goodness.
Right,
good
right.
Word picture.
Oh.
You can, I mean,
yeah.
He'll still put you back together.
Yeah.
Well, probably better off, too.
Yeah.
I mean, here, this was always a funny one. Okay, say you die, but you're an organ donor.
Yeah, that's what I'm planning on, being an organ donor.
Okay. So your heart went to somebody, your kidneys went to somebody, your liver went to somebody, your spleen went to somebody,
your eyes or something.
Your eyes went to somebody, and then the rapture happens. Boom.
Oh, God,
kidneys!
You see everything flying?
Look at my eyes, man!
Fire, so when you're dead, why burn?
Double it up. why go?
Why cook me again?
Yeah. Yeah, we, yeah, as you have to understand that so much of what we, the traditions and commandments of men that we have had throughout the centuries, basically, I can probably, 90% of them I can point all the way back to Constantine. Constantine was the Roman ruler that legalized Christianity, which at that time was good on one hand because it stopped the persecutions, but like the church fathers knew, it was devastating to the church in general because what it did in that society, it's not our society. See, in our society, we go, well, church and state, church and state. Well, see, this is new. Our society is something totally new, guys, for 250 years. Prior to this time, it was always church and state are one. And if you were a member of the Roman state, you were also a member of Christianity. And that's where baptism of infants came in. What's one way? See, they didn't have social security numbers back then, guys, and they didn't have birth certificates. So what is one way to make sure that everybody here is a Christian, quote unquote?
That's right.
When they're infants. That shows us that you're a part of this government, your kids are part of this government, but it's, they're all unsaved. It's huge. Anyway, that's a whole other topic. Well, there we go today. We talked about something totally different. Hope it's helpful for you, Des. That's awesome.
Sorry, it was my fault.